America, bonjour, hi, Canada. Say a prayer for our Americans and our allies abandoned by Joe Biden in Afghanistan. Our first guest this hour, live in the Beltway, is Byron York of the Washington Examiner. You see him on Fox News. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning, Hugh.
What's your assessment?
Well, it's the end that we should have seen coming for the last couple of weeks. It was really going to happen. And I also think that as you listen to Secretary of State Blinken speak over the last couple of weeks, it was also clear that they were never going to get every single American out of Afghanistan who wanted to get out of Afghanistan, if there were some tiny number who didn't. But anyway, it was pretty clear. Plus, the thing that was really clear was that the entire operation was dependent on the goodwill of the Taliban. And last night at 9 o'clock, Ned Price, the State Department spokesman, tweeted, quote, "The Taliban needs to meet its commitments and obligations in Afghanistan on freedom of travel, respecting basic rights of the people, upholding its commitments on counterterrorism, not carrying out reprisal violence against those who stayed, and forming an inclusive government," which is kind of an Alice in Wonderland sort of position of the State Department. But here we are.
Byron, do you? I have not seen authenticated the helicopter hanging video. Do you believe it to be true?
I don't know. I have seen that video, and I have not seen any other evidence of Taliban actually flying the Black Hawks as opposed to standing around looking at them.
Now, have you got any authentication? I'm not reporting it as fact. I'm just asking because you're a pretty good source. There are pictures of service dogs left behind, too, which I'm not authenticating. I'm not saying is true. Do you know about them?
No. Both of those things Dwayne mentioned to me in the break before we started talking. I said, you know, I've seen them both, but they're the sort of thing you say. I saw it on the Internet.
Yeah, I'm just telling people, don't take it to the bank. We don't know that. I do know what General McKenzie said, Americans in the low hundreds. Do you have a minimum number? I can't understand why we don't get a minimum number. I mean, low hundreds, how many is the at least? Is it 101? Is it 201? Is it 250? I've heard all sorts of different numbers.
Well, the Secretary of State Blinken yesterday said, or last night, said that it was no more than 200, maybe closer to 100. And here again, he was unclear, just as officials have always been unclear the whole time.
What and does that include green card holders, Byron? Do you know? I mean, these are not hard questions, but they've avoided them from three different podiums for 3 weeks, which is citizens, green card holders, allies. And it's three different questions, three different podiums, never answered once in 3 weeks.
Correct. And by the way, the allies, the whole allies question is unclear exactly what all of our standards are for the release for the evacuation of allies. Last night, I just found it here. Blinken in his remarks said, more than 123,000 people have been safely flown out of Afghanistan. That includes about 6,000 American citizens. So we're talking 6,000 Americans, 117,000, perhaps loosely defined, allies, I don't know, and somewhere between 100 and 200 Americans who are still there.
And I believe green card holders ought to be called Americans, because if you got a permanent resident card, you're an American. You're not a citizen. You can't vote, but you're supposed to be able to get back to the country. And we've always admitted you without question. Byron, yesterday I had lunch with Dan Rundy of the Center for Strategic and CSIS. And Dan and I talked at length about Afghanistan and Haiti. And then I walked back with him to CSIS, and I got a driver, an Uber, Afghan kid, 29 years old, been in the country since 2018, worked as an interpreter, and then for Fleur. His sister and brother are still there. They're younger than he is. His sister was in college. They're staying indoors. There's no way to send money to the country now. He's scared to contact them. He used the word confused repeatedly. He's not visibly angry at anyone. He's just confused and sad and despairing and working harder because he's going to have to get enough money to get them to a border somewhere. What is the idea on the Hill? I think we ought to take in all 117,000, vet them when they're here like we did after the fall of Saigon, and let people stay. We have let this country down so badly. But what is the thinking on the Hill?
Well, I think that they want to know more about the 117,000 because, first of all, if you remember early on in this, we heard that there were 10 to 15,000 U.S. citizens in Afghanistan. And then it turned out, according to the State Department, that number was overstated, and it really was 6,000, roughly. And Blinken says those 6,000, with the exception of somewhere between 100 and 200, Americans have been evacuated. And by the way, on the 100 and 200, they've been very squirrely on the question of whether U.S. forces simply haven't been able to get to them. They really want to leave, but we haven't been able to get to them, or they didn't want to go. And it seems clear that there are some Americans who really want to leave that the United States was not able to get to in those frenzied last days.
Matthew Downer, I don't know if you follow his Twitter account, Hillsdale grad, Marine, University of Michigan lawyer, Hill staffer now, tweeted out last night, I know him well, right now in Kabul are American citizens who waved their passport at gate after gate but couldn't get through. And now America has left them to the Taliban. I believe Matt Downer. I do not believe the three podiums.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, I mean, what can you say? That is absolutely clear abandonment. And by the way, it's a result of these terrible tactics, this terrible plan that the administration chose to actually get people out.
Yeah, this was by choice. It was all arbitrary and stubborn, and it's all on Joe Biden. Now, I do not. Tomorrow, Kurt Schlichter is sitting in for me because I got to fly to California and do an event with Leader McCarthy, and I'm glad to do it. But Kurt is going to sit in, and he's been talking to veterans. I'm a civilian. I don't critique the chain of command because I don't know anything about how this works. But I'm getting a lot of angry email from people who say they are embarrassed and dismayed that no one has resigned. What have you heard about this?
Well, civilians can critique the chain of command.
I know. I just don't. I choose not to because I don't know anything.
Well, but obviously we've built civilian control of the military.
Right.
One of the
right.
sacred principles of our government. I think that as far as Republicans on Capitol Hill are concerned, you're seeing one. Desire to know, most of all, why weren't all U.S. citizens taken out of Afghanistan? Two, who were the 117,000 who were non-Americans who were taken out, and what were the standards used to vet them? Three, what in the world is happening with the billions and billions of dollars of weaponry and machinery of war that were left there? And then four, what is going to happen as far as the continuing relations, quote, with the Taliban? So all of those are pretty questions.
I just want to know why the failure to plan. My driver yesterday had his SIV. I said, how long it take? 6 months from application. He found the Army unit that he worked for, and he found the floor executive that he worked for in services for 10 years. They both signed on. He was allowed to bring his wife. He could not bring his siblings. The SIV process took 9 months, and the refugee assistance was for 2 months, and then he was up on his feet and working two jobs. I want to know why, if Joe Biden was so damn certain we had to leave, why he didn't give himself 9 months to get everyone out. He also, by the way, someone told me our embassy there is an $8 billion building.
Yeah. And it's now an $8 billion Taliban building. And, what can you say? If you look at the projections from the Biden administration, for how long the government, the Afghan government would last. They all projected it would last months after the United States left. And it was one of the worst projections ever. So there's the other question is, why were they so wrong about that?
Many, many questions. But in Joe Biden's speech today, he needs to accept responsibility and just resign. I know he won't, but that's what he should do. Byron York, thank you. I'll be right back. More of your calls coming up on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Senator Joni Ernst joins me. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, good morning, Hugh.
Just before you called, I had a call from Phil in Orlando, who is a veteran and a Gold Star father, and he told us the name of his son, Staff Sergeant Robert Miller. I looked it up. Staff Sergeant Miller is a Medal of Honor recipient for conspicuous, extraordinary gallantry in Afghanistan on January 25th of 2008. His father did not mention that because he was speaking for Gold Star parents everywhere. They're in agony over this debacle, Senator, and I mean, the humility in the fact that he didn't tell us his son is a Medal of Honor recipient is itself honorable. But I think he wanted to make a broader point, which is it's a very tough time for people like you and for veterans, but especially for Gold Star families.
Yeah, absolutely, Hugh. And one of my dearest friends is a Gold Star wife, and she has been speaking quite loudly. She's been, you know, out talking on radio shows just that the sacrifice that her husband made in Afghanistan nearly a decade ago. And our Gold Star families are often those forgotten ones. They have sacrificed so much, and yet they fall outside of the normal everyday thinking. We're thinking about our wounded. We're thinking about the veterans that served because we can speak out. But we, you know, allow the memories of those Gold Star families, their loved ones, to just fade away. And we shouldn't ever do that because their sacrifice is greater than any of us.
Now, I want to add, I don't think anybody's service was in vain. I happened to have had lunch yesterday with a CSIS expert on Afghanistan, Dan Rundy, and I walked back to his office with him, and I got an Uber, and the driver is a 29-year-old Afghan expat who got his SIV in 2018 after working for the Service and Floor Corporation from 2008 to 2018. He's left behind a brother and sister. They couldn't come on an SIV, but his wife is here. His sister's in college. That might go away, but the country got a lot of freedom for 20 years, and he hopes may have changed enough that the Taliban can't change it back. What do you think, Senator?
Well, I do think that he is right, and I think that thinking is right, is that there is a seed that has been planted in Afghanistan with the brightness and hope that America and her allies took into Afghanistan. But even greater than that, the sacrifice of the men and women that served in the global war on terror, they provided safety here on the homeland. They took the fight to the terrorists overseas, so that we could continue with daily lives here in the United States of America, so that we didn't have to face another 9/11. And that is one of the greatest gifts that these warriors, you know, our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, could have given to us over the past two decades. Their service has not been in vain. I am so thankful for all that they have given. But what I have not heard our commander-in-chief are those words. He has not said thank you to the global war on terror veterans. I haven't heard him say thank you to those Gold Star families who gave that ultimate sacrifice. Not a single word. I've heard him say thank you to the people that were working at the airport, but he refuses to acknowledge the wonderful job that our service members did over the course of the past two decades to keep our homeland safe.
Senator, do you have any idea how many Americans we abandoned? I know General McKenzie said in the low hundreds. I've heard various estimates, but it doesn't tell us about green card holders. It doesn't tell us about SIV eligible people. But Americans, just pure Americans, do we know how many?
No, we don't, Hugh. And this is the really hard thing, is that when Americans are in Afghanistan, they don't have to tell our government that they're in Afghanistan. We may not know where they are. But of those that we do know are in Afghanistan, those that have been reaching out to congressional offices, the State Department, we need to have a full accounting of every American that is in Afghanistan. So we keep getting these numbers. Oh, you know, 200, maybe as few as 100. Well, folks, we need to know that.
There's a minimum number.
Too many.
I understand that they can't be certain about how many are there, but they can be certain about a minimum number. But from three podiums, the Pentagon, State, and the White House, repeatedly over 3 weeks, no one has given us a minimum number ever. And it's a dereliction of their duty to inform the United States. Now we're going to start finding out what's happened to these people. And so, Senator, what kind of accountability do you want from the president and his chain of command team at State, which is responsible for the fiasco and not getting Americans out, and the Pentagon, which is responsible for the plan or non-plan that went into this catastrophe?
Right. And accountability does need to happen. And that is something we need to focus on in the upcoming weeks. But I would say that right now we need to finish the evacuation. The administration left our own American citizens behind. So whether they were Americans, of course, those SIV recipients, the at-risk personnel, they're still in the country. So what we do need to do is continue the effort to pressure the administration on whatever authorities they need to make sure we continue and finish the evacuation. Whatever that is, we need to make sure we get those Americans out. Afghanistan is back to being a hotbed. Our global counterterrorism fight has changed significantly. We have to keep our eyes and ears open more so than we have in the past, because we no longer have those eyes and ears within the country of Afghanistan. And then we need to start reassuring our allies and partners around the world. The U.S. has suffered a heavy blow under Biden, President Biden. He has pulled the rug out from under our closest allies. And what they believe is that the U.S. is no longer a completely reliable ally. So then going back to your question, Hugh, once we have started on all of those things, once we get those Americans out, then we have to turn back to our leadership and start those investigations. We have to know who knew what when, why did it happen the way it did, and who the heck allowed this withdrawal to turn into an emergency evacuation, the biggest debacle that we have seen in our history going back decades. So, yes, there has to be accountability, but my focus right now is still very much on those Americans that were left behind and ensuring their safety. You know, the Biden administration can't just wash their hands of this right now and say, oh, well, we did our best. No, absolutely not. We have to keep going. We have to get accountability of those that are still in the country. We have to know those numbers, and we've got to figure out how the heck we're going to get them out.
It is the political interest of the president to not have specificity, to have not have names and faces on these Americans and on these green card holders. It is accountability to get those names, faces, and to be known. I've never met a hostage family that did not want publicity. I don't know if they're hostages yet or if they're in hiding, but we need to know. Senator, last question. Mm-hmm. If I'm an advisor to President Xi, I say the United States president is weak and infirm based on everything that we have seen. Weak and infirm. If you're going to strike now, and I think Putin makes the same calculation, how do we deter that?
That is very hard when you have weak leadership, as demonstrated through this administration. But to your point, you are correct. So what we need to do, whether it is through our Department of Defense, whether it's through our Department of State, we need to start shoring up our systems. I think that certainly this is a great time for a gray zone attack, you know, something short of war that the Russians and the Chinese could capitalize on. But certainly we are weakened now, not only in the country of Afghanistan and across the Middle East, but we are weakened in the eyes of our friends and allies. This is a really bad, bad place to be in. But
very perilous.
We need to be clear-eyed on those attacks coming.
Do they dare bring a JCPOA 2.0 to the country now? I mean, will anyone trust them, even Democrats, even the left? Would anybody trust this gang to negotiate with the killers in Tehran?
Oh, for heaven's sakes. I mean, we just negotiated with the Taliban. I think JCPOA 2.0 is probably the next item on this president's list. I can't believe the man has pushed out so many mistruths. Yes, we could say lies, you know, one being we'll not leave Americans behind. Well, we just did. And the other was promising Israel that Iran would never get a nuclear weapon. And that's exactly what a JCPOA would provide for, is a pathway, you know, a lengthened pathway to nuclear capability by Iran. So I don't trust this administration. Our American public should not trust this administration. It is very, very disappointing what we have seen over the course of the last month or so in Afghanistan, and especially in the last several days as we tried to get as many Americans out as possible. I don't trust them. I don't at all.
Senator Ernst, on that note, thank you for calling in this morning. I appreciate it. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Congressman Michael Waltz from Florida's 5th Congressional District. Congressman Waltz, it's always good to have you. I always tell people my son works on your staff, so we get that out of the way. I want to tell you that earlier this hour, Phil from Orlando called, an American veteran who is a Gold Star father. His son, Staff Sergeant Robert Miller, he mentioned his name, but he didn't tell us. I looked up during the break. That is a Gold Medal of Honor recipient. Staff Sergeant Miller was a special forces like you, Green Beret, died in Afghanistan, and for conspicuous gallantry received the Medal of Honor. His father was talking about the extraordinary grief Gold Star families are enduring during this. And as a combat veteran of Afghanistan, what do you say to him? I think they did so much good that we can't overlook.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for raising that and for the veterans, for the Gold Star families, for the victims of 9/11 even. I want them to hear me crystal clear. Their sacrifice was not in vain. An entire generation of Americans were kept safe. An entire generation grew up without having to worry about planes flying into buildings, without worrying about suicide bombers on school buses, and having to worry about terrorism coming here at home, at least not emanating from Afghanistan. And so they should be proud of that. I'm proud of that. I wear a bracelet of the Green Berets, several of the Green Berets that I lost overseas. And I tell myself every day to be worthy of their sacrifice as I continue to serve in Congress. It was not in vain. But to your point, people are struggling. The Veterans Hotline has seen a serious uptick. I've never seen the community so despondent, so depressed. And just really questioning what was it all for. And I think that's because how this was done. It's just shameful. It's more so, Hugh, the fact that we left so many behind and that we left so many of our allies behind. I mean, I personally had one of my interpreters beheaded at a Taliban checkpoint. I had an Afghan soldier die and bleed out in my arms as I was trying to save him. To this day, I still take care of his family and send money to his children. So this administration just had no clue the emotional investment that this community has made in our longest war, and to end it the way that they have. And by the way, I don't even like saying that. The war hasn't ended. Now, this administration's only extended it. And future, what has me so upset is future soldiers are going to have to go back after the homeland is threatened again, which I fully believe and in Biden's intelligence community says is going to happen. And after the homeland's threatened again, our future soldiers are going to have to go back. But now they have no bases. We gave them all away. We have no local allies. They're literally being hunted down as we speak. And we're going to have to face a terrorist army armed to the teeth with billions of dollars of American equipment. It's infuriating. And he has every right to be upset. But his son's sacrifice is not in vain.
Congressman Waltz, yesterday I happened to have had lunch with Dan Rundy from CSIS, and we walked back to his office. I got an Uber driver who was a 29-year-old Afghan man who came here on an SIV in 2018 after serving the American military as an interpreter and floor as an employee for 9 years. His brother and sister are still there, younger. They're hiding. His sister was in college. His brother is older. There's no way to even get the money. But I do think that those who are struggling have to realize that this driver and thousands of other Afghans lived normal lives for 20 years, and many of them got out and will recover, but because of their sacrifices. It's just not in vain. It's just Joe Biden is acting like it is.
Yeah, look, I got a message from a Middle East, an ambassador from the Middle East, and he said that, you know, the message across the region is jihad is won and democracy is lost. He said to me, I cannot even get started on how bad this is for your country, its image, and its objectives around the world. It's not a policy issue. It's a moral disgrace. This is from an allied ambassador. I think the ramifications of this in the veterans community, amongst our allies, and certainly with our adversaries, is going to be felt for a generation.
Last question, Congressman.
Already. Yeah, sure.
Does it fade? I remember Beirut and how terrible it was when we lost hundreds of Marines. And a year later, President Reagan was reelected. Does this fade like a campaign cycle? Because it sure seems like Team Biden is treating it like a campaign story that will fade in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so yes and no. The White House communications shop is, I think, breathing a sigh of relief, because I think by the end of this week, without American soldiers on the ground, and those horrific images in Kabul International Airport, which was never defendable, I think they are hoping to move on. However, here's the difference in Saigon. Here's the difference in Beirut. You know, I don't think there's any reasonable expectation the Viet Cong were going to follow us home and hit us again. Al-Qaeda fully intends to. ISIS fully intends to. And now they have an entire country to work with. And again, billions of dollars of American arms to work with, and the intelligence is clear. They fully intend to. So it's going to come roaring back, whether it's in the form of American hostages that the Taliban, ISIS, Haqqani are going to take every time they have a demand for international legitimacy, currency, what have you, or it's going to come roaring back in terms of threats to the homeland.
Congressman Michael Waltz from Florida's 6th Congressional District, thank you for joining us. I will be back, America. Follow him at Michael G. Waltz on Twitter. Follow me in the next hour of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Thank you, Congressman. America, bonjour, hi, Canada. Say a prayer for our Americans and our allies abandoned by Joe Biden in Afghanistan. Our first guest this hour, live in the Beltway, is Byron York of the Washington Examiner. You see him on Fox News. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning, Hugh.
What's your assessment?
Well, it's the end that we should have seen coming for the last couple of weeks. It was really going to happen. And I also think that as you listen to Secretary of State Blinken speak over the last couple of weeks, it was also clear that they were never going to get every single American out of Afghanistan who wanted to get out of Afghanistan, if there were some tiny number who didn't. But anyway, it was pretty clear. Plus, the thing that was really clear was that the entire operation was dependent on the goodwill of the Taliban. And last night at 9 o'clock, Ned Price, the State Department spokesman, tweeted, quote, "The Taliban needs to meet its commitments and obligations in Afghanistan on freedom of travel, respecting basic rights of the people, upholding its commitments on counterterrorism, not carrying out reprisal violence against those who stayed, and forming an inclusive government," which is kind of an Alice in Wonderland sort of position of the State Department. But here we are.
Byron, do you? I have not seen authenticated the helicopter hanging video. Do you believe it to be true?
I don't know. I have seen that video, and I have not seen any other evidence of Taliban actually flying the Black Hawks as opposed to standing around looking at them.
Now, have you got any authentication? I'm not reporting it as fact. I'm just asking because you're a pretty good source. There are pictures of service dogs left behind, too, which I'm not authenticating. I'm not saying is true. Do you know about them?
No. Both of those things Dwayne mentioned to me in the break before we started talking. I said, you know, I've seen them both, but they're the sort of thing you say. I saw it on the Internet.
Yeah, so I'm just telling people, don't take it to the bank. We don't know that. I do know what General McKenzie said, Americans in the low hundreds. Do you have a minimum number? I can't understand why we don't get a minimum number. I mean, low hundreds, how many is the at least? Is it 101? Is it 201? Is it 250? I've heard all sorts of different numbers.
Well, the Secretary of State, Blinken, yesterday said, or last night, said that it was no more than 200, maybe closer to 100. And here again, he was unclear, just as officials have always been unclear the whole time.
What and does that include green card holders, Byron? Do you know? I mean, these are not hard questions, but they've avoided them from three different podiums for 3 weeks, which is citizens, green card holders, allies. And it's three different questions, three different podiums, never answered once in 3 weeks.
Correct. And by the way, the allies, the whole allies question is unclear exactly what all of our standards are for the release for the evacuation of allies. Last night, I just found it here. Blinken in his remarks said, more than 123,000 people have been safely flown out of Afghanistan. That includes about 6,000 American citizens. So we're talking 6,000 Americans, 117,000, perhaps loosely defined, allies, I don't know, and somewhere between 100 and 200 Americans who are still there.
And I believe green card holders ought to be called Americans, because if you got a permanent resident card, you're an American. You're not a citizen. You can't vote, but you're supposed to be able to get back to the country. And we've always admitted you without question. Byron, yesterday I had lunch with Dan Rundy of the Center for Strategic and CSIS. And Dan and I talked at length about Afghanistan and Haiti. And then I walked back with him to CSIS and I got a driver, an Uber, Afghan kid. 29 years old, been in the country since 2018, worked as an interpreter, and then for Fleur. His sister and brother are still there. They're younger than he is. His sister was in college. They're staying indoors. There's no way to send money to the country now. He's scared to contact them. He used the word confused repeatedly. He's not visibly angry at anyone. He's just confused and sad and despairing and working harder because he's going to have to get enough money to get them to a border somewhere. What is the idea on the Hill? I think we ought to take in all 117,000, vet them when they're here like we did after the fall of Saigon and let people stay. We have let this country down so badly. But what is the thinking on the Hill?
Well, I think that they want to know more about the 117,000 because, first of all, if you remember early on in this, we heard that there were 10 to 15,000 U.S. citizens in Afghanistan. And then it turned out, according to the State Department, that number was overstated, and it really was 6,000, roughly. And Blinken says those 6,000, with the exception of somewhere between 100 and 200, Americans have been evacuated. And by the way, on the 100 and 200, they've been very squirrely on the question of whether U.S. forces simply haven't been able to get to them. They really want to leave, but we haven't been able to get to them, or they didn't want to go. And it seems clear that there are some Americans who really want to leave that the United States was not able to get to in those frenzied last days.
Matthew Downer, I don't know if you follow his Twitter account, Hillsdale grad, Marine, University of Michigan lawyer, Hill staffer now, tweeted out last night. I know him well. Right now in Kabul are American citizens who waved their passport at gate after gate but couldn't get through. And now America has left them to the Taliban. I believe Matt Danner. I do not believe the three podiums.
Yeah, well, if that's that's the case, I mean, what can you say? That is absolutely clear abandonment. And by the way, it's a result of this terrible, these terrible tactics, this terrible plan that the administration chose to actually get people out.
Yeah, this was by choice. That it was all arbitrary and stubborn, and it's all on Joe Biden. Now, I do not. Tomorrow, Kurt Schlichter is sitting in for me because I got to fly to California and do an event with Leader McCarthy, and I'm glad to do it. But Kurt is going to sit in, and he's been talking to veterans. I'm a civilian. I don't critique the chain of command because I don't know anything about how this works. But I'm getting a lot of angry email from people who say they are embarrassed and dismayed that no one has resigned. What have you heard about this?
Well, civilians can critique the chain of command.
I know. I just don't. I choose not to because I don't know anything.
Well, but obviously we've built civilian control of the military.
Right.
One of the
right.
sacred principles of our government. Look, I think that on as far as Republicans on Capitol Hill are concerned, you're seeing one desire to know most of all why weren't all U.S. citizens taken out of Afghanistan? Two, who were the 117,000? Who were non-Americans who were taken out, and what were the standards used to vet them? Three, what in the world is happening with the billions and billions of dollars of weaponry and machinery of war that were left there? And then four, what is going to happen as far as the continuing relations, quote, with the Taliban? So all of those are pretty questions.
I just want to know why the failure to plan. My driver yesterday had his SIV. I said, how long it take? 6 months from application. He found the Army unit that he worked for, and he found the floor executive that he worked for in services for 10 years. They both signed on. He was allowed to bring his wife. He could not bring his siblings. The SIV process took 9 months. And the refugee assistance was for 2 months, and then he was up on his feet and working two jobs. I want to know why, if Joe Biden was so damn certain we had to leave, why he didn't give himself 9 months to get everyone out. He also, by the way, someone told me our embassy there is an $8 billion building.
Yeah. And it's now an $8 billion Taliban building. And I mean, what can you say? If you look at the projections from the Biden administration for how long the Afghan government would last, they all projected it would last months after the United States left. And it was one of the worst projections ever. So there's the other question is, why were they so wrong about that?
Many, many questions. But in Joe Biden's speech today, he needs to accept responsibility and just resign. I know he won't, but that's what he should do. Byron York, thank you. I'll be right back. More of your calls coming up on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Senator Joni Ernst joins me. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, good morning, Hugh.
Just before you called, I had a call from Phil in Orlando, who is a veteran and a Gold Star father. And he told us the name of his son, Staff Sergeant Robert Miller. I looked it up. Staff Sergeant Miller is a Medal of Honor recipient for conspicuous, extraordinary gallantry in Afghanistan on January 25th of 2008. His father did not mention that because he was speaking for Gold Star parents everywhere. They're in agony over this debacle, Senator. And I mean, the humility in the fact that he didn't tell us his son is a Medal of Honor recipient is itself honorable, but I think he wanted to make a broader point, which is it's a very tough time for people like you and for veterans, but especially for Gold Star families.
Yeah, absolutely, Hugh. And one of my dearest friends is a Gold Star wife, and she has been speaking quite loudly. She's been, you know, out talking on radio shows just that the sacrifice that her husband made in Afghanistan nearly a decade ago. And our Gold Star families are often those forgotten ones. They have sacrificed so much, and yet they fall outside of the normal everyday thinking. We're thinking about our wounded. We're thinking about the veterans that served because we can speak out. But we, you know, allow the memories of those Gold Star families, their loved ones, to just fade away. And we shouldn't ever do that because their sacrifice is greater than any of us.
Now, I want to add, I don't think anybody's service was in vain. I happened to have had lunch yesterday with a CSIS expert on Afghanistan, Dan Rundy, and I walked back to his office with him, and I got an Uber. And the driver is a 29-year-old Afghan expat who got his SIV in 2018 after working for the Service and Floor Corporation from 2008 to 2018. He's left behind a brother and sister. They couldn't come on an SIV, but his wife is here. His sister's in college. That might go away, but the country got a lot of freedom for 20 years, and he hopes may have changed enough that the Taliban can't change it back. What do you think, Senator?
Well, I do think that he is right, and I think that thinking is right, is that there is a seed that has been planted in Afghanistan with the brightness and hope that America and her allies took into Afghanistan. But even greater than that, the sacrifice of the men and women that served in the global war on terror, they provided safety here on the homeland. They took the fight to the terrorists overseas, so that we could continue with daily lives here in the United States of America, so that we didn't have to face another 9/11. And that is one of the greatest gifts that these warriors, our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, could have given to us over the past two decades. Their service has not been in vain. I am so thankful for all that they have given. But what I have not heard our commander-in-chief are those words. He has not said thank you to the global war on terror veterans. I haven't heard him say thank you to those Gold Star families who gave that ultimate sacrifice. Not a single word. I've heard him say thank you to the people that were working at the airport, but he refuses to acknowledge the wonderful job that our service members did over the course of the past two decades to keep our homeland safe.
Senator, do you have any idea how many Americans we abandoned? I know General McKenzie said in the low hundreds. I've heard various estimates, but it doesn't tell us about green card holders. It doesn't tell us about SIV eligible people. But Americans, just pure Americans, do we know how many?
No, we don't, Hugh. And this is the really hard thing, is that when Americans are in Afghanistan, they don't have to tell our government that they're in Afghanistan. We may not know where they are. But of those that we do know are in Afghanistan, those that have been reaching out to congressional offices, the State Department, we need to have a full accounting of every American that is in Afghanistan. So we keep getting these numbers. 200, maybe as few as 100. Well, folks, we need to know that.
There's a minimum number.
Too many.
I understand that they can't be certain about how many are there, but they can be certain about a minimum number. But from three podiums, the Pentagon, State, and the White House, repeatedly over 3 weeks, no one has given us a minimum number ever. And it's a dereliction of their duty to inform the United States. Now we're going to start finding out what's happened to these people. And so, Senator, what kind of accountability do you want from the president and his chain of command team at State, which is responsible for the fiasco and not getting Americans out, and the Pentagon, which is responsible for the plan or non-plan that went into this catastrophe?
Right. And accountability does need to happen. And that is something we need to focus on in the upcoming weeks. But I would say that right now we need to finish the evacuation. The administration left our own American citizens behind. So whether they were Americans, of course, those SIV recipients, the at-risk personnel, they're still in the country. So what we do need to do is continue the effort to pressure the administration on whatever authorities they need to make sure we continue and finish the evacuation. Whatever that is, we need to make sure we get those Americans out. Afghanistan is back to being a hotbed. Our global counterterrorism fight has changed significantly. We have to keep our eyes and ears open more so than we have in the past because we no longer have those eyes and ears within the country of Afghanistan. And then we need to start reassuring our allies and partners around the world. The U.S. has suffered a heavy blow under Biden, President Biden. He has pulled the rug out from under our closest allies. And what they believe is that the U.S. is no longer a completely reliable ally. So then going back to your question, Hugh, once we have started on all of those things, once we get those Americans out, then we have to turn back to our leadership and start those investigations. We have to know who knew what, when, why did it happen the way it did, and who the heck allowed this withdrawal to turn into an emergency evacuation, the biggest debacle that we have seen in our history going back decades. So, yes, there has to be accountability, but my focus right now is still very much on those Americans that were left behind and ensuring their safety. You know, the Biden administration can't just wash their hands of this right now and say, oh, well, we did our best. No, absolutely not. We have to keep going. We have to get accountability of those that are still in the country. We have to know those numbers, and we've got to figure out how the heck we're going to get them out.
It is the political interest of the president to not have specificity, to have not have names and faces on these Americans and on these green card holders. It is accountability to get those names, faces, and to be known. I've never met a hostage family that did not want publicity. I don't know if they're hostages yet or if they're in hiding, but we need to know. Senator, last question. Mm-hmm. If I'm an advisor to President Xi, I say the United States president is weak and infirm based on everything that we have seen. Weak and infirm. If you're going to strike now, and I think Putin makes the same calculation, how do we deter that?
That is very hard when you have weak leadership as demonstrated through this administration. But to your point, you are correct. So what we need to do, whether it is through our Department of Defense, whether it's through our Department of State, we need to start shoring up our systems. I think that certainly this is a great time for a gray zone attack, you know, something short of war that the Russians and the Chinese could capitalize on. But certainly we are weakened now, not only in the country of Afghanistan and across the Middle East, but we are weakened in the eyes of our friends and allies. This is a really bad, bad place to be in. But
very perilous.
We need to be clear-eyed on those attacks coming.
Do they dare bring a JCPOA 2.0 to the country now? I mean, will anyone trust them, even Democrats, even the left? Would anybody trust this gang to negotiate with the killers in Tehran?
Oh, for heaven's sakes. I mean, we just negotiated with the Taliban. I think JCPOA 2.0 is probably the next item on this president's list. I can't believe the man has pushed out so many mistruths. Yes, we could say lies, you know, one being we'll not leave Americans behind. Well, we just did. And the other was promising Israel that Iran would never get a nuclear weapon. And that's exactly what a JCPOA would provide for, is a pathway, you know, a lengthened pathway to nuclear capability by Iran. So I don't trust this administration. Our American public should not trust this administration. It is very, very disappointing what we have seen over the course of the last month or so in Afghanistan, and especially in the last several days as we tried to get as many Americans out as possible. I don't trust them. I don't at all.
Senator Ernst, on that note, thank you for calling in this morning. I appreciate it. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Congressman Michael Waltz from Florida's 5th Congressional District. Congressman Waltz, it's always good to have you. I always tell people my son works on your staff, so we get that out of the way. I want to tell you that earlier this hour, Phil from Orlando called, an American veteran who is a Gold Star father. His son, Staff Sergeant Robert Miller, he mentioned his name, but he didn't tell us. I looked up during the break. That is a Gold Medal of Honor recipient. Staff Sergeant Miller was a Special Forces, like you, Green Beret, died in Afghanistan, and for conspicuous gallantry received the Medal of Honor. His father was talking about the extraordinary grief Gold Star families are enduring during this. And as a combat veteran of Afghanistan, what do you say to him? I think they did so much good that we can't overlook.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for raising that, and for the veterans, for the Gold Star families, for the victims of 9/11 even. I want them to hear me crystal clear. Their sacrifice was not in vain. An entire generation of Americans were kept safe. An entire generation grew up without having to worry about planes flying into buildings, without worrying about suicide bombers on school buses, and having to worry about terrorism coming here at home, at least not emanating from Afghanistan. And so they should be proud of that. I'm proud of that. I wear a bracelet of the Green Berets, several of the Green Berets that I lost overseas, and I tell myself every day to be worthy of their sacrifice as I continue to serve in Congress. It was not in vain, but to your point, people are struggling. The Veterans Hotline has seen a serious uptick. I've never seen the community so despondent, so depressed, and just really questioning what was it all for. And I think that's because how this was done. It's just shameful. It's more so, Hugh, the fact that we left so many behind and that we left so many of our allies behind. I mean, I personally had one of my interpreters beheaded at a Taliban checkpoint. I had an Afghan soldier die and bleed out in my arms as I was trying to save him. To this day, I still take care of his family and send money to his children. So this administration just had no clue the emotional investment that this community has made in our longest war, and to end it the way that they have. And by the way, I don't even like saying that. The war hasn't ended. Now, this administration's only extended it. And future, what has me so upset is future soldiers are going to have to go back after the homeland is threatened again, which I fully believe, and in Biden's intelligence community says, is going to happen. And after the homeland's threatened again, our future soldiers are going to have to go back. But now they have no bases. We gave them all away. We have no local allies. They're literally being hunted down as we speak. And we're going to have to face a terrorist army armed to the teeth with billions of dollars of American equipment. It's infuriating. And he has every right to be upset. But his son's sacrifice is not in vain.
Congressman Waltz, yesterday I happened to have had lunch with Dan Rundy from CSIS, and we walked back to his office. I got an Uber driver who was a 29-year-old Afghan man who came here on an SIV in 2018 after serving the American military as an interpreter and floor as an employee for 9 years. His brother and sister are still there, younger. They're hiding. His sister was in college. His brother is older. There's no way to even get the money. But I do think that those who are struggling have to realize that this driver and thousands of other Afghans lived normal lives for 20 years, and many of them got out and will recover, but because of their sacrifices. It's just not in vain. It's just Joe Biden is acting like it is.
Yeah, look, I mean, I got a message from a Middle East, an ambassador from the Middle East, and he said that, you know, the message across the region is jihad is won and democracy is lost. And, you know, he said to me, I cannot even get started on how bad this is for your country, its image, and its objectives around the world. It's not a policy issue. It's a moral disgrace. This is from an allied ambassador. So, I think the ramifications of this in the veterans community, amongst our allies, and certainly with our adversaries, is going to be felt for a generation.
Last question, Congressman.
Yeah, sure.
Does it fade? I remember Beirut and how terrible it was when we lost hundreds of Marines. And a year later, President Reagan was reelected. Does this fade like a campaign cycle? Because it sure seems like Team Biden is treating it like a campaign story that will fade in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so yes and no. I mean, right, the White House communications shop is, I think, breathing a sigh of relief, because I think by the end of this week, without American soldiers on the ground and those horrific images in Kabul International Airport, which was never defendable, I think they are hoping to move on. However, here's the difference in Saigon. Here's the difference in Beirut. You know, I don't think there's any reasonable expectation the Viet Cong were going to follow us home and hit us again. Al-Qaeda fully intends to. ISIS fully intends to. And now they have an entire country to work with. And again, billions of dollars of American arms to work with. And the intelligence is clear. They fully intend to. So it's going to come roaring back, whether it's in the form of American hostages that the Taliban, ISIS, Haqqani are going to take every time they have a demand for international legitimacy, currency, what have you, or it's going to come roaring back in terms of threats to the homeland.
Congressman Michael Waltz from Florida's 6th Congressional District, thank you for joining us. I will be back, America. Follow him at Michael G. Waltz on Twitter. Follow me at the next hour of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Thank you, Congressman. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator. Thank you for joining me.
Good to be on with you, Hugh. I can't say it's a good morning after Joe Biden's completely disgraceful abandonment of American citizens and so many of our Afghan allies in Afghanistan yesterday. So it's actually, in my opinion, a pretty mournful morning for America.
It is. I had a number of specific questions, Senator. You're on Senate Intel. Has anyone told you the number of Americans who have left been left behind, the number of green card holders, because I believe they are counting them in a separate category, and the number of allies eligible and known to us that we left behind?
Hugh, not beyond what we've all read in the news or you've seen from some of the hapless briefings of Joe Biden and his senior national security team. We're not in session at the moment, so senators are scattered across the country and not near secure facilities for that kind of classified briefing. But also, I'm not sure the State Department, in its ineptitude, has a good handle of it. Yesterday, Tony Blinken tried to minimize the number of American citizens left behind in Afghanistan, but Frank McKenzie, the head of Central Command, said that it was in the hundreds. And you make a good distinction that we saw firsthand over the last few days, you American citizens and green card holders. Of course, we have to focus first on getting our citizens out, but as you know, Hugh, green card holders are just one step away from citizenship. They have the legal right to live and work and travel to and from the United States. In many cases, green card holders are married to, the children of, the parents of American citizens. And my staff who worked on this evacuation in a kind of freelancing way over the last 2 weeks encountered many cases in which green card holders were turned back the State Department in the Kabul airport were only accepting American citizens. Another shameful chapter in this disgraceful exit from Afghanistan. And then the third category, you say, is going to be much larger to you. Those Afghans who were loyal supporters of our troops in Afghanistan for the last 20 years, who were approved for a visa, who were vetted, yet who were left behind. Well, at the same time, the Biden administration was allowing what is likely to be thousands of Afghans who had no particular relationship to the United States military to fly out and get into third countries like Qatar and maybe even come to the United States. So it's just been incompetence, ineptitude, and disgrace all around.
Now, Senator, for 3 weeks, there have been three podiums at the Pentagon, at the State Department, and the White House, at which briefing after briefing, have engaged in duplicitous, I can only say duplicitous, non-information sharing, because there are certainly available minimum numbers of Americans in the country, minimum numbers of green card holders, minimum numbers of allies. And if we were leaving yesterday, we should have told people we were leaving yesterday. I'm astonished at the duplicity. Has that struck anybody but me? I know how to brief. I know how to give people facts. And I'm a lawyer, and I just heard duplicity. It would never survive a deposition or a cross-examination. It was just duplicitous.
And it won't soon survive congressional oversight that is coming about this fiasco, both looking backward at what happened, decisions like closing down Bagram and sticking to the arbitrary deadline of today, also looking forward, the Biden administration's plan for how to manage more than 125,000 civilian evacuees. I'm glad they're all out of Afghanistan and out of the grips of the Taliban, but that doesn't necessarily mean they all have a right to come and live and work in the United States. As for the duplicity, Hugh, I think from the beginning, the Biden administration has treated this fiasco like a one-day bad campaign headline. You know, that Joe Biden, you know, was back in the summer of 2020, and he went on some progressive talk radio program and stuck his foot in his mouth once again, and they had to go out and clean up what he said and just kind of grit through a bad news cycle. But the next day, it would be a new set of stories. That seems to be the way they've treated this from the beginning. And, you know, that's one thing you can do on a campaign when there's just a bunch of words flying around. But this is not a campaign. This is reality. And the reality is Joe Biden promised the Taliban he would leave by August 31st. He promised American citizens in Afghanistan that he would stay until he got them all out. He kept his word to the Taliban. He broke his word to our fellow citizens.
Now, Senator, you have been involved in conduct of oversight on the war for many, many years now, and you fought the war. You were in Afghanistan. One question about the Doha Agreement. Did it oblige the United States to leave by a date certain?
So the date was May 1, but there were also conditions on the Taliban, conditions that the Taliban started violating almost immediately, and then continued to violate this year. I also point out that Joe Biden has chose this arbitrary deadline of September 11th, and then he backed it up 10 days to August 31, despite that May 1 agreement. So you would think that if Joe Biden decided, well, we're not going to leave by May 1, we're going to leave by September 11th, because he thinks that provides some kind of potent symbol, he would have been willing to back it up a few more months so we can get out of the peak of the fighting season and into the quiet winter season. But no, he wanted his big September 11th symbol. Well, the symbol that he got is a disgraceful abandonment of Afghanistan and the Taliban flag flying over what was the American embassy in Kabul just 3 weeks ago.
Now, Senator, I want to make the point I've been explaining to people. If you enter into escrow to buy a house and there are conditions and those conditions are breached, you don't have to buy the house. If you enter into an escrow and you offer to sell your house and there are conditions attached to the sale and those conditions are not met, you don't have to sell the house. The Doha Agreement was an escrow on a process that was supposed to result in a coalition government and with guarantees of security for American allies and American citizens. They violated that in March when they attacked Forward Operating Base Chapman. It has not been operable since then, in my view. I think it's nonsense and propaganda to utter anything other than that. Let me ask you about a specific call I had this morning from Phil Miller in Orlando, an Army veteran like yourself. He is also, sadly, a Gold Star father. He mentioned his son, Staff Sergeant Robert Miller. He did not tell me. I looked it up during a break. Staff Sergeant Miller is a Medal of Honor recipient for extraordinary bravery in Kunar province in Afghanistan in 2008. And he wanted to let people know how very, very difficult today is for Gold Star families who are wondering, was it worth it? I have my views that absolutely it was, because I had an Uber driver yesterday, a 29-year-old SIV holder who got out in 2018 and his brother and sister didn't, but he and his wife are here. I believe we gave them 20 years of freedom and we saved a lot of lives and liberated a lot of people. But what do you say to people like Phil Miller and other Gold Star families, who I'm sure you meet on the campaign trail?
Well, first, I want to express my gratitude once again to all the veterans who served in Afghanistan, and especially the Gold Star families who lost their loved one in Afghanistan. And there's no question in my mind that all of their sacrifices, including that ultimate sacrifice, was worth the noble effort in which they engaged for 20 years. And the success, which was a great success after 9/11, is that Afghanistan has not been used to launch another terrorist attack against the United States for 20 years. And considering the number of foreign terrorists that had congregated in Afghanistan, that had remained there, or that would travel there over the last 20 years, that is a great achievement. And I've explained that to some of the Gold Star families that I know in recent weeks, and they all agree that they are very proud of what their loved ones accomplished. They're very proud of what all of our troopers accomplished over the last 20 years, even if, like Mr. Miller, they are dismayed by the shameful way in which Joe Biden executed this decision to withdraw from Afghanistan.
Now, Senator, I am not any military expert, and as a civilian, I withhold any kind of critique of the operation of the Pentagon and the chain of command from the Secretary of Defense down. I think Joe Biden is absolutely a disaster and that Tony Blinken ought to resign. But I'm wondering what you think about the military here. Ought there, did you expect resignations? Ought there to be accountability as a soldier, as on armed services and oversight with experience and knowledge that I don't have? What do you think of the planning here?
Hugh, we need to get to the bottom of that. These are relatively simple, straightforward questions for which there are relatively easy, knowable answers. Just take the example of closing Bagram Air Base. I can assure you, as someone who served in the military, that there are PowerPoint decks sitting in the Pentagon about the courses of action to take with Bagram Air Base. And we need to know who saw that deck. And who made the decision? Was that a decision that was made at the uniformed officer level? Did, say, a general officer make that decision? Did Secretary Austin make the decision? Or, as I suspect, was that decision made by people like Jake Sullivan, Ron Klain, or Joe Biden in the White House? Again, these are relatively straightforward and simple questions for which there are paper trails, and I expect the Congress will be very eager to find exactly who was responsible for some of the disastrous tactical decisions that led to the chaos of the last 2 weeks. And if that stopped at the general officer level, then yes, there should be accountability.
Do you have any question? I'm looking at the video on our YouTube channel of the Chinook helicopters left at Kabul Airport. They have been, we've been told they've been disabled. I can't understand it. Why are they why were they not loaded onto a plane? How can we leave that there?
Hugh, again, those are the kinds of questions that we'll be probing in the Armed Services Committee, not just how the equipment from the Afghan army fell into Taliban hands, but the equipment that was in our hands that we left behind. Those, again, questions we want to get the answers to. It's not clear to me either why they weren't removed or why they weren't blown in place. But again, these are all relatively straightforward, knowable questions, and we expect to get the knowledge, and we won't tolerate bureaucratic stonewalling or finger-pointing or spin.
1 minute left, Senator. China has to look at Joe Biden to see a weak and infirm commander-in-chief and accelerate any plans they have, ditto Putin. To what do you hope they get message other than that?
Well, unfortunately, you've already seen China taunting Taiwan as a result of Joe Biden's shameful abandonment of Afghanistan. I think our adversaries around the world are going to recognize that Joe Biden is incompetent and impotent and feckless. In the same way that after Barack Obama's infamous red line moment in Syria, you had Xi Jinping militarizing islands in the South China Sea, contrary to his promises, and Vladimir Putin invading Crimea less than a year later. So much of America's security guarantees are bound up in the way our adversaries perceive the American president. And unfortunately, the world perceives Joe Biden as impotent, weak, and incompetent right now.
Senator Tom Cotton, thank you for spending time with me on a very dark day in American history without precedent. We've never left Americans behind like this. Thank you, Senator. I also want to remind everyone, I get to go out. Your day is beginning. My day is ending. It starts earlier than yours, but it ends, and it means I get to exercise. I'm going to go out with my ReliefFactor.com enhanced ability to go a ways, go a few miles this morning, pray for these people that we've left in Afghanistan, and I mean, pray hard. I can't even begin to think of the fear that they are in and the family. I think of my driver yesterday, whose brother and sister are 21 and 25, respectively. The girl was in college, no more. Well, I get to exercise in a free country, and I'm grateful for that. You should be, too. If you've got any aches and pains associated with getting older or exercise, try ReliefFactor.com. They're sponsors of this show, and I appreciate that greatly, so I can talk to you on days like this with people like Senator Tom Cotton. I'm going to switch to California politics, where Alex Michelson is going to join me next to update us on the recall, because if you're angry with him, the president and the Democrats, that's a place to take it out in California. Stay tuned. 51 minutes after the hour, America, I'm Hugh Hewitt, heading to California today after the program. Kurt Schlichter will be sitting in for me tomorrow as I am doing an event at the Nixon Library with House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy, Ambassador Robert O'Brien on national security in the 2022 elections. Before those elections, we have a recall election in California, and my friend Alex Michelson of Fox LA Channel 11 joins me. Alex has been updating us every week. Alex, what has happened in the last week, and where do we stand?
Well, Hugh, Afghanistan, which has been the big story for you all morning, has been a big part of the California recall race as well. Kamala Harris, the vice president, was supposed to come to California for the biggest rally, biggest event of the recall race. It was supposed to be a car rally up in Northern California in Daly City, and that was announced. And then the Afghanistan attack happened, and then that event was promptly canceled. And so there is no plan so far for either Vice President Harris or President Biden to come back to California to campaign with Governor Newsom. And Governor Newsom has not held a campaign event since. And so I think they're trying to figure out where they go from here, how much they campaign from here. And meanwhile, all the Republicans keep up their attacks every day on Governor Newsom and try to recall him.
Now, I would like to get your sense of the Republican dynamic. I've endorsed Larry Elder. I believe from what I see on social media that he's ahead among Republicans. I know Kevin Falconer is appearing to mount a very conscious effort to get to be the other guy, the Democrat, other than the guy whose name I can't remember because he's a YouTube star and nobody knows him. How goes the question two?
Right. So, again, question two on the ballot is, who should replace Governor Newsom if he's recalled? Kevin Faulkner is going after Larry Elder really hard. Kevin Faulkner, the former mayor of San Diego. And what could be the key to Kevin Faulkner winning is whether Democrats vote for him or not. The San Francisco Chronicle did a big column, Joe Garofoli, saying, who should you vote for if you're a Democrat? Governor Newsom says, leave question two blank. Don't vote for anybody. A lot of Democrats think that's anti-democratic. They think it's a bad strategy for the state also because you're essentially giving away your vote, and they feel like that means the most extreme Republicans are the ones that are going to choose. They think that's good for Larry Elder. Kevin Faulkner, more moderate, more centrist, more in line with a lot of Democratic positions. Could he be somebody that they vote for? If they do vote for him in significant numbers, Kevin Faulkner could end up winning this thing, and you could see support for him that you have not seen in the polls. The polls, though, seem to suggest that Larry Elder is the runaway favorite on question two. We'll see.
Now, tell me about the number of ballots back. Does the Secretary of State office work like the California Secretary of State office usually does, poorly and late? Or do we have a number of ballots returned in their ID?
We've got over 3 million ballots that have already been turned in, which is, I think, over about 12-14% of the ballots that went out. And so far, they're disproportionately Democratic. 54% of the ballots turned in so far are Democratic. Doesn't mean that all the Democrats are voting for Newsom, but so far the numbers are good if you're Team Newsom. There, of course, is the thought that Republicans prefer to vote in person and probably are holding on to their ballots longer to try to determine which candidate they want to support. But the numbers so far are leaning Democratic.
Now, that does not tell me the one thing I need to know. There's no metric. All we have are general elections. But is that return of absentees greater than the ordinary election or less than the ordinary election? Alex Michelson.
It's actually ahead of the pace of where we were at in 2020, which was a record election in California. So it's an indication that Democrats are more fired up than some people thought that they would be.
That's how I would read it. Yeah. I would read that as a very good sign for Team Newsom. We won't know until we get closer, but we'll check in next week and find out again. Has Gavin Newsom been meeting with the press and answering questions, Alex?
Not regularly. Today he's doing a public event, which is his first public event in over a week.
Wow.
I mean, it's been kind of remarkable how little he's been doing on that front. I did an interview with him a couple weeks ago, and that was one of the last interviews that he's done. So we hope that changes.
It's the Biden playbook. They're just going to try and ride it out and not. There's a fire. There's the COVID. There's Afghanistan. There's just a terrible series of events, and he's just going to hide.
Well, and where he does his interviews has also caused controversy. He did an interview with The Atlantic last week, which a lot of people in the California press corps were upset about because he's focused on that, did something with The Economist and not with California reporters. I will say he's done more interviews with me than anybody in the state. I'm always grateful for the time and hope I get to talk to him more soon. But I know my colleagues are not happy on that front.
Alex Michelson, follow him on Twitter at @ELEX_Michelson. I will see you maybe tomorrow, if not soon. Thank you, Alex. Next week, we'll be back with another update on the California recall. Pray for the Americans abandoned by Joe Biden in Afghanistan. There are at least 100. There may be more. The green card holders are allies. Kurt Schlichter in tomorrow. I'll be back on Thursday as the Hugh Hewitt Show continues.